Welcome back to the Sell and Tell podcast. Again, we have another episode today. Super excited about today. But first, we have to say that in the DFW area, we had snow. So I'm wearing my snow sweater today. It didn't snow for long, but we still got some. So the episode today that we're going to hit is uncovering the truth with some home inspections in DFW real estate. First, we want to hit the listing of the week. So make sure y'all are liking and subscribing our videos, because the listing of the week will always be from input in the DFW Realtor area. Today we have one from Frankie Arthur, and I will let my co-host Cindy take it away from here.
Great. We've got the featured listing of the week where it offers 4 bedrooms, 3.5 baths, and 3,579 square feet. It's got soaring ceilings, elegant wood floors. It's an open concept design. It's a spacious living room, modern fireplace, expansive windows. It's got a lot of natural lights, inviting atmosphere, chef's kitchen, quartz countertops, massive island, stainless steel appliances, custom cabinetry, and the primary suite is a private retreat. It's got a huge accent wall with large windows, pool views, and a spa-inspired en-suite with dual vanities and a soaking tub. It's got a walk-in shower with his and her closets, with 3 additional bedrooms, and each has their own unique charm. And all with in-suite access. So this home is designed for both comfort and convenience. There's a meeting room for movie nights, and it's complete with a built-in bar and wine fridge. There's a resort-style pool in the back, and so it's your own private backyard oasis. Don't miss your chance at owning this beautiful one-story at 3810 Peppergrass Lane in Prosper. So contact Frankie Arthur team today at 972-655-7105 or visit frankiearthur.com. So it's not going to last long.
Awesome. Well, I love me some property out in Windsong Ranch. It's a beautiful community, guys. So let's get out there and make some sales this weekend. Let's head on over to our episode. Today, we're going to get into the home inspections, and we have Blake here today, Blake Williams. Hi, Blake. How are you? You want to introduce yourself and give us a little bit of background on you?
Yeah. Hi, Jess. I'm doing great. And I've been in the home inspection business. I started working for my dad's company in 1998. In 2009, I started my own company, and now Super Inspector operates in the Dallas-Fort Worth, all across North Texas, Austin, San Antonio, Houston. We have an office in Las Vegas, one in Salt Lake City, and one in the Maryland, Virginia, D.C. area. So we employ about 60 inspectors, and we do about 12,000 home inspections a year.
Wow, that is quite a bit, Blake.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about home inspections and why it's such a critical step in the home buying process for everyone?
Yeah, I mean, the reason why it's such a critical step is because the last thing you want is for the buyer to move into the house and then have a bunch of surprises, because they're not going to be happy, and first thing they're going to do is call their real estate agent, call their inspector. And when things go really wrong and a lawsuit gets filed because of things that they didn't know about the house that come up, everybody gets sued. It's not just the home inspector that gets sued. It's usually the home inspector, the buyer's agent, the listing agent, and the seller all get sued. So we don't want any of that. We want to uncover as much about the house as we can so that there's full disclosure, so that there are no surprises after the sale and everybody's satisfied. They know what they're buying and they got what they bought.
That would be excellent. Yeah, we want to keep a minimum lawsuits. What is the difference between the pre-listing inspection versus buyer inspections? What does that look like, and what is the importance of each of them?
And specifically talking about Texas, in Texas, home inspectors are licensed by the Texas Real Estate Commission. So anytime they accept work to do a home inspection on a house that is being considered for sale, that's whether the seller just says, "Hey, I'm thinking about selling my house." All of a sudden, now the TREC regulations come into effect. So the inspector has to follow the TREC regulations. So from that perspective, there's no difference between the standards of practice are exactly the same for a pre-listing inspection as they are for a buyer's inspection. The difference is the client you're working for, right? And so the expectations of the client might be different. And from the home inspector's perspective, they understand that I'm going to do this pre-listing inspection, and then later the buyer's going to hire an inspector. So I've got somebody coming after me that's going to be looking at the same thing I'm looking at. So I want to make sure that I get everything on the report because we don't want the seller to have surprises when the buyer's inspection comes around. And so really, you're just working for the seller and you're trying to help them get the house ready for sale. You're trying to help the listing agent market the house. So a pre-listing inspection, some listing agents that we work for will put copies of the inspection report out on the house, so when buyers come through, they can pick one up if they want. I've worked for investors that would buy a rehab house, get it all renovated, and then have us come in and inspect it, and they would market the house as being pre-inspected. And then, especially at that price point, these were usually lower-end homes, and they were getting offers coming in with waiving the inspection. They were telling us at that time, back in when things were moving a little faster, 3 out of 5 offers coming in where they were waiving the inspection because they already had an inspection report to go off of.
Okay. Well, and you mentioned something about track and following the guidelines of track. Even so, you're licensed, just for our listeners so agents understand as well. So you're a licensed inspector. What type of track regulations do you have to follow? As most agents, especially new agents, and even myself, I don't even know, when does track fall under your purview?
Yeah, anytime you accept money to do a home inspection for a house that's being considered for sale, then you have to follow the standards of practice. You have to be licensed and follow the standards of practice. And those standards are very lengthy, but in general, you're required to inspect any item in the house that is listed in the standards of practice. So that's like the foundation, the roof structure and attic, the walls, ceilings, floors, doors, fireplaces, and so on down the list. So you're required to inspect those and you're required to report deficiencies and then you're required to make a written report. So, in some states, especially where there's no licensing, they'll do what they call walk and talk inspections, where they'll just go in with a buyer, walk through the house, point out some things that they see, and then leave without issuing a report. You really can't do that in Texas. In Texas, you are required to produce a written report for every inspection that you do.
For the relos out there, because you brought up an interesting point, if you have a seller coming in from out of state, and or you have an agent that you're working with that has a buyer that's selling their home from out of state, I guess I should say, are there any states that you know of that you can kind of educate agents as our listeners that don't have written inspections? They do that talk and walk like that?
Yeah, so I believe, and the walk and talk inspections came about back in 2021 when the real estate markets were going crazy and there was competition for every listing. And so people were trying to figure out ways to say, "Hey, I just need a quick inspection. I don't want to cause any problems with the seller. I want to make my offer look better. So just come walk through the house with me." And so a lot of inspectors, there was demand for that service, and so they started doing it. The unlicensed states, you might be surprised to find out, there's, I believe, 13 states that do not license home inspectors. California is one of them. Georgia, Idaho. Let's see, what are some of the other ones? Maine does not license home inspectors, but there's several. So what you look for in those states is inspectors who are certified by one of the associations. So the two main associations are the American Society of Home Inspectors, ASHI, or the International Association of Certified Home Inspectors, which is InterNACHI. And so InterNACHI is the largest one. They have about 23,000 members, I think, last I checked. ASHI was the first, but right now they have less than 2,000 members. So they have their own standards of practice, and they're very similar to the Texas standards of practice, with one main difference. In Texas, you're required to use a certain report form, and in most other states, whether they're licensed or unlicensed, the inspector can choose what kind of form he uses to report the information on. So, or he can choose not to use a written report. But a written report's always better. Texas was the first state to license home inspectors, and they're considered to have the most stringent requirements to get your home inspector license.
Okay, that's really good information for agents because we got a lot of reloads out there, so especially coming into Texas. So that's good. That's really good to know if you have people, especially coming from states like California. But that also poses a question that, in different areas of the United States, we all have different kind of housing foundations and things of that nature. So what are some unique challenges specifically to the DFW housing market that pose a challenge to inspectors, such as the soil shifting and the foundation issues?
Yeah, so the highly expansive clay soils. We have a large percentage of homes that have issues with termites, which is kind of outside the scope of the home inspection because it's really under the scope of a pest inspection. But most home inspectors are licensed for pest in Texas, so they're looking for that. And then we have the climate. So we have extreme changes in weather here between hot and dry cycles. I mean, hot and cold cycles and wet and dry cycles, which affects the soil. The soil here in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex and running down alongside the east side of 5 all the way through Austin, San Antonio, and then over to Houston is really unique soil, highly expansive clay soil. I mean, geologists come from all over the world to study the soil here because it's very unique. And so it expands and contracts dramatically with changes in moisture content. So when we have these wet and dry cycles, hot and cold cycles, the soil, when it gets wet, it balloons up and it pushes the house up. When it gets dry and hot outside, the moisture evaporates out of the soil contracts and the house goes down. And so we expect to see cracks in the walls and the houses in North Texas. Where in other states, you don't expect to see that. And so it's much more of a concern in other state. And so a whole industry has been created out of that with foundation evaluation, foundation repairs, and so forth. And one interesting thing to note that's different for home inspectors in Texas than in any other state is that the Texas Real Estate Commission requires home inspectors to issue an opinion as to the performance of the foundation. And so in no other state is that required. So the state recognizes two licensed professionals as being able to give an opinion as to the performance of the foundation. That's licensed professional engineers and licensed home inspectors. So foundation repair contractors are not licensed by the state of Texas. And they're not recognized by the state as being able to give an opinion as to the performance of the foundation. Doesn't mean they can't, but the state doesn't recognize them as a licensed contractor. And so the inspector in Texas should say the foundation is performing as intended or it's not performing as intended. If he says it's not performing as intended, then he has to list the evidence that led him to that him or her to that conclusion. And so that's why you'll see on the report, there was a crack in the wall over here, crack in the foundation over there, separations around the windows, and so forth. That's all the evidence compiled to form the opinion of the foundation. And that opinion is the inspector's opinion. An engineer may come out and have a different opinion than the inspector. That doesn't mean one's right or one's wrong. There are really no standards that say if this, then the foundation needs to be repaired. It's all an opinion. the foundation repair contractors typically operate under a very narrow set of tolerances that they use, and that helps them sell foundation repair. Not that they're being dishonest, but they are taught to operate under that narrow set of tolerances that may be applicable in other areas, but where we are, the tolerance is should be much broader because of the amount of movement that we have and the way that the foundations are constructed to kind of absorb that movement. And so what we look for is there functional problems with the house caused by foundation movement? So are there doors that won't close because they're out of square because the foundation is moved? Is there windows that are binding or broken, or are there large separations in the exterior coverings that can allow moisture to come in? Are the rafters coming apart in the attic? When we see those kinds of functional problems, those are the kinds of problems that would elicit an opinion that this foundation's not performing as intended. If it's just a few cracks or it's out of level, but there's no functional problems, then there's really no need to fix the foundation, in my opinion. And so when I talk to engineers, and we try to get all our inspectors trained by engineers so that they can form a good opinion on the foundation, the engineers tell us that most foundation repairs performed in North Texas are unnecessary. They've thrown around numbers like 90% are unnecessary. So it's really, yeah. So it's really good to, if the inspector says, I don't believe this foundation's performing as intended, get a structural engineer out. Don't rely on a foundation repair contractor. The engineer is going to save you money in three different ways. One, they're going to avoid unnecessary repairs. Number two, they're probably going to limit the scope of repairs. So where a foundation repair contractor might say you need 12 piers across the back of the house, the structural engineer may come in and say, hey, look, you just need to fix the drainage over here, or you need to put soaker hoses around the foundation. So the scope of the repairs would probably be way more limited that structural engineer recommends. And then thirdly, once you have a scope of work prepared by the engineer, then you can put that scope of work out for bid and get some competing bid among the repair contractors. So you should get a lower price through that competition.
That 90% shocks me.
Yeah.
So definitely get you somebody licensed, credible out there first before you go to, I guess, more of the salesperson side with the repair people.
Yes, no doubt.
Somebody independent of the repair of the.
Right.
Yeah, that would save a whole lot of money. And that actually leads me to talking about some of these new construction homes too, because I was thinking about it while you were talking us through it. Have we seen, is it under your umbrella that whenever you inspect a home, have you seen any kind of long-term effects? I guess it shouldn't be long-term yet, but during COVID, as we're just raking out these houses left and right with new construction, a lot of builders couldn't get their hands on radiant barrier and certain things. Are we seeing an effect from that whenever you do an inspection on those homes?
Yes, one of the biggest ones that we're seeing right now is actually in pool construction, swimming pool construction in the Central Texas area. There's a certain type of concrete that is used in pool construction, gunite pool construction, and they couldn't get there's a additive in the concrete that makes it hold up to the pressures of swimming pool that they couldn't get, and so there were several pool contractors that just left it out. So now we're seeing these pool surfaces are cracking and deteriorating very rapidly just within a few years. The repairs can be over anywhere from minor crack repair to a total renovation of the pool over $100,000. That's probably the most costly one that we've seen. In some areas where they had shortage of drywall, especially like in Florida and the coastal areas when there were hurricanes, people started buying drywall from Chinese sources and it was made with sulfur in it. And so then the sulfur causes oxidation on the electrical wiring and would cause it to degrade and turn black and corrode and cause loose connections that could result in fire, We didn't have a whole lot of that in North Texas, so we look for it more down on the coast, and then, like I said, especially in Florida. That was one. Here in North Texas, we didn't see a whole lot. The market moved pretty well through that. We do see a lot of, even now, because of labor shortages, it's just a lot of things, inattention to detail in the construction of the houses. And so we go to test the plumbing and the drain pipes are not connected, or the sprinkler systems are all messed up. There's missing insulation all over the place in new houses. We see just like the whole master bedroom, there's no insulation in the ceiling, or we find walls where there was no insulation put in the walls. We find problems with the drains. We like to do sewer camera inspections on every inspection. That is an option. Most inspectors offer that now. We started doing it back in 2019. And on new construction especially, we find beer cans down in the drain pipes. We find rocks. We find clumps of drywall mud. We found one where they were putting in the gas line and they trenched right through the sewer line and just put the gas line in and covered it up. And so everything was just draining under the ground in the front yard. A lot of just inattention to detail because of labor shortages, so that there's a shortage in skilled labor. And so the people that are working on the houses, even the supervisors, are spread thin. And so they can't supervise projects like they'd like to. And so it's a really a great idea to have a third party inspector come in. Some builders will hire third party inspectors, but typically those reports don't go to the buyer, they just go to the builder. We work for one home builder. Is all right if I name them?
If you can.
Yeah, so Astoria Homes. They're a smaller local home builder, and we inspect every single one of their homes after it's finished. The builder hires us to do that, and then he provides that kind of pre-listing inspection to the buyer whenever he gets the home sold. So that seems to be a really good process. We do a lot of new construction inspections, and it's increased to about, I think, 30% of our inspections now are new construction. Where if I go back to 2019, it was about 13% of the homes we inspected were new construction. And that's just because the inventory of existing homes is just not there.
So you would say it's pretty important that to kind of have a third party inspection outside of that builder inspection, just so you get your own report at least, right?
Yeah, and if you're, it's a great thing for the buyer because it builds confidence in the transaction. When they have their own inspector who's gone through the house and they have the report and they talk to the builder about it. Some builders are very good about taking the report and walking through it with the buyer and say, here's the things that I can fix or I will fix, and these are some things that I won't fix. And so now they have a lot more confidence going into closing and they feel a lot better about the transaction. And maybe Cindy can talk to that too. I think from a real estate agent perspective, I think it really helps the transaction a lot.
Yeah, you're no stranger to beer cans and McDonald's bags in your walls, right?
Not at all. Not at all. That's happened a few times.
Yeah.
How do you see it from an agent perspective?
Well, I mean, the inspection is a vital part of it, and especially on resales, because you never know what will crop up. I think every home needs to have an inspection. And I will say, anyone that buys a home and doesn't have an inspection, it's a problem. I know of two people recently who, forwent the inspection and they ended up kicking themselves later for it and spending thousands because if they had only done the inspection, they would have found these problems and ended up spending either a lot less money or passing on the property because of these issues. So inspections are vital.
Yeah, absolutely. Whenever you're the seller, how do you prepare for an inspection? If you want to have an inspection before you put it on the market so that you do have that availability to put the inspection on the, let's say, kitchen counter whenever you do an open house so people can take it with you. Is there anything that they should do to prepare? I mean, clean your house, but when people are walking through it.
Yeah, there's a lot of things. Even if you're a seller and the buyer's hired an inspector and you know the inspector's coming, there's some things that need to be done, and mainly because we want to make sure that the inspection gets done in the allotted time frame, that there are no things that the inspector can't inspect because of a locked door, obstructions in front of the water heater or the electric panel, things like that that get in the way of the inspection. Because most of the time, the inspector is just going to mark that item as, well, I couldn't inspect that item, it was inaccessible. And then what's the buyer going to say? Well, I want it inspected. And so
Right.
now it's, okay, well, I'll be happy to come back tomorrow and take a look at it once they remove the obstruction. And then it's like, but there's a fee for that. And then it's who's going to pay the fee? And I've seen buyers and sellers get in big fights over this. It's unfortunate, but for residential customers, it's a really emotional thing, buying the house and selling the house both. And so emotions run high. And so we want to avoid all that and make sure all the doors are unlocked, gates are unlocked, the utilities are on. Sometimes we run across a house where the seller knew they were going to sell the house and they have like one gas appliance and they just go ahead and have the gas turned off. And then the inspector shows up and it's like, okay, the gas is off. I can't inspect the gas supply system or the gas appliances. And so that turns into what we call a re-inspect, having to go back out to the house. We want to make sure that there are no obstructions in front of the electric panel, to the point where, the inspector needs to remove the cover off of the electric panel, undo the screws, and take the cover off. And so they need to be able to do that without any obstructions in front of it. So boxes stacked in front of it. Some inspectors will move boxes, some won't. The standards of practice don't require you to move the obstruction, but you can. And for our company, we tell our inspectors, do whatever you can to try to get that inspected. But sometimes, there's 25 boxes piled in the garage in front of the electric panel. And you don't know what's in them, you don't want to break something, and it's just like, and usually what we do is we immediately call the listing agent, say, hey, we have this obstruction. Is there any way we can get this taken care of while we're here so that we can finish our inspection? So those are the main things: locked doors, utilities, and obstructions. Unload the dishwasher. We want to check the dishwasher out without dishes in it. We're going to run it through a cycle, but we want to be able to see the trays and things like that. Try to clean the house up so that everything's accessible. The buyers are probably going to come over, so you don't want the house to be in a mess.
Right. Yeah, so what would you say whenever you do an inspection, what are some things that our agents out there that are listening that are good things to that they can negotiate versus things that you usually see are just deal breakers, people aren't going to fix it, move on, don't waste your time type of thing?
Yeah, I like to say there's not really any deal breakers. The only deal breaker is if there's a problem and nobody either side is willing to pay for it, then it becomes a deal breaker. As long as somebody's willing to pay to fix it, almost everything in a house can be fixed. So that's the real deal breaker, is can we negotiate a repair or a credit on this? So the main things are, number one, you want to look at the report and say, what are the unknowns on here? So the air conditioner wasn't cooling, but we don't really know what's wrong with it. Well, we need to get that looked at before the end of the option period, if possible, at least before closing. Same thing with the inspector might say, well, there's some hail damage on the roof. Well, we need to get that looked at so we know what we're dealing with there. Is it an insurance claim? Is it a total replacement? Is it just some minor hail damage? So anything that's kind of an unknown, we need to get looked at, and going to be a major expense. So roof, foundation, HVAC, termite damage, those are some of the major things. And plumbing now, we're finding so many problems with drain pipes. I think we counted We took a sampling of 16 homes that we did sewer camera inspections on, and 10 of them had repairable problems on and within the sewer drains, and especially homes with cast iron drain pipes. Those were installed before 1978, and so they're timing out. They're just getting rusted through. And so if they have cast iron, if it hasn't already been repaired or replaced, then it's likely there's going to be a big repair there. And that can run up anywhere from $5,000 to $30,000. So getting a sewer camera inspection, in my opinion, is very important. So those are the big things. You want to make sure that you know the unknowns, because the inspector can't tell you everything. And then you want to, foundation repairs. Again, it depends on the buyer and their means, right? They may say, "Hey, it doesn't matter if the foundation's bad or the air conditioner. I'm going to replace all that anyway when I move in the house, so don't even worry about it." So a lot of it depends on your client and what their means are and what their intentions are with the house. If you've got a client that doesn't have a lot of cash, then getting those repairs negotiated and paid for by the seller becomes really important. And the foundation, the roof, the HVAC, the plumbing, and termites are the big ones. Did
Yeah,
that
those are
answer
going
your
to be the big
question?
ones. Yeah, absolutely. That's great information for us. I do have one more question, and it's a fun question that I like to send out to everybody that comes on. But first, I know Cindy has worked with agents for a very long time now, and there might be some things that I'm missing that are crucial information for agents out there. So I want to hand it over to Cindy real quick and see if there's anything left that maybe some agents are possibly wondering sometimes.
Well, I mean, always, they're always looking for the best inspectors, people who will look at all the details. So, I mean, we know the best inspectors are the ones that are going in and making sure things are thoroughly looked at, So I think that's one of the most important things that, they're getting, they know that they are, can trust their inspectors.
Yeah,
So
I think the
that's
best,
definitely.
yeah, the best source to me for finding an inspector is your realtor. So if you have a great realtor, they know which inspectors are going to do a great thorough inspection. They have a relationship. There's a school of thought out there that says, "Hey, this inspector's beholden to the realtor." That doesn't really happen, at least not in my experience. The realtors want a good, thorough inspection, and they know the inspectors that will do that. And so I would say rely on your realtor and look at their reviews. There's Google reviews out there, and they tell a lot of the story. No inspector's perfect. There's always going to be some bad reviews on every inspector. And most of the problems arise when a client doesn't attend the inspection. So it's really important that the buyer attend the inspection so that the inspector can go over the report with them, walk them through the house if they need to, show them these things so they get a better understanding. Most of the time, when there's a problem, a client says, "Well, the inspector didn't find this," or "Somebody didn't tell me that," it's usually when they didn't attend and they didn't read the inspection report.
So you are all, certified by the Texas Real Estate Commission. Are there any advanced certifications that people should be looking for in their inspector or anything like that that you guys have to do, advanced classes or anything?
So inspectors are required to have 16 hours of continuing education a year. It's 32 hours every 2 years you're required to have. Now, InterNACHI has a certified master inspector designation that's out there. So that's an advanced certification that you can get through the International Association of Certified Home Inspectors. Other than that, you can look on their website. There are usually system-specific certifications that they might have. They might be a certified septic inspector, certified pool inspector, certified roof inspector, that kind of thing. However, none of those certifications are required in order to inspect a pool. You don't have to be a certified pool inspector. the real estate commission just says you have to be competent. And so in Texas, the real estate commission doesn't provide any advanced certifications. They only require that you be competent and that you have continuing education.
Hey, competency can still be a stretch, so we still got to watch out for that one.
Yes.
It's so true.
So I have a really good question that I love to send out to everybody that comes on. Give us a big no-no in home inspections or a good horror story, because I know there's a lot out there, so we want to hear it.
Yeah, so the big no-no is for home inspectors is don't cause a problem where no problem exists. That's our rule, and it's too many times we see inspectors that, there's a small problem that could be easily fixed and they make a big deal about it, or there's something that they just don't understand, and so they think it's a problem when it's really not. And they make it an issue in the inspection report, and that causes all kinds of problems within the transaction. So, don't cause a problem where no problem exists. Number one rule for a home inspector. And then, some of the things that we find, like I said, one time we did a sewer camera inspection, and we found a deflated basketball in the sewer line going out of the house. And we're like, where did this come from? And so we had a picture of it, and we put the picture in the report. And then, like 2 or 3 months later, we get this letter from an attorney wanting us to pay, demanding that we pay this bill on behalf of the homeowner for repairing the sewer lines. And in the demand letter, he had a picture of the deflated basketball in the sewer line. And it was the picture from our report. And so I called the guy. I said, you realize that that picture you put in your demand letter came right out of our home inspection report? And he was like, it did? He was so embarrassed. He said, oh my gosh, the guy gave me that. If I'd have known that, I would have never sent this demand letter. And I was like, okay. So
Gosh.
anyway, kind of a funny story, but we find all kinds of things. The biggest house I inspected ever inspected was 18,000 square feet back when I was
Gosh.
inspecting by myself. It took me 3 days to inspect it by myself.
God.
And in one of the attics, there was a pile of raccoon manure that was probably 2 feet tall and three
My
feet
gosh.
wide. And when I opened the
Nope.
door, I was like, oh my gosh. I've never seen anything like that, but yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, Blake, how about you shoot your information out there for everybody too, so they know how to contact you?
Yeah, so you can reach us at yoursuperinspector.com. You can find us on Facebook at Super Inspector and Instagram at Super Inspector. We're pretty active on social media. We've got a lot of videos out there, a lot of fun stuff. You can text us at 940-367-1708. Email us info@yoursuperinspector.com. Any way you want, we have online scheduling. You can call me anytime if you just have questions about something. My cell phone number is 940-231-4307. Happy to answer any phone calls.
Well, thank you so much for coming on today, Blake. Everyone out there that's listening, make sure if you're new, go through, subscribe, follow us on social media. If you're an agent with a listing, make sure you subscribe and send us your listing for next week, which we do have a fantastic episode next week as well. We're going to look at home staging, which is one of my favorite things. Love beautiful little designs every time we do a listing. So stay tuned for that. And again, Blake, thank you so much for coming on today.
You bet.
Thanks,
Thank you
Blake.
for having me. Thank you, Cindy.
Absolutely. Y'all have a great day, guys. Sell and tell us about it later. Have a great weekend.